So we're beginning our class in the Jewish home. And you might ask yourself, does it matter how much self-worth or self-esteem or self-confidence a person has? Where does it matter if a person is insecure?
As far as a marriage.
So let's take an example. I want to tell you a story, a true story, from approximately 16, 17 years ago. It was my first morning in the Lower East Side. I was going against many relatives who told me I shouldn't go to yeshiva, and I decided I was going to go. And it wasn't an easy move. And I got up bright and early. I went to Vasikin Minyan, and I'm new to town. So after Vasikin, I go to the local coffee shop. I want to get something for breakfast. So the woman behind the counter is a very nice but terse lady, and she's still there. I visited the Lower East Side a year or two ago, and same nice and terse lady. She's very curt, and what do you want? And she's quick to sell me what I want. And then I say, you know, there's a coffee machine back here. How do you make a cup of coffee? So she says, it's not so difficult. Take a cup, put it there, and push that button. But not that button, that button. Now imagine she's a distance of 3 meters pointing to buttons that are about 3 inches from one another. So I put my finger on one button, I say, this one. And she's like, yeah, no, the other one. So I push the other one. And the coffee starts coming down, and it doesn't stop. Now there's a retarded man, literally a man who's in his 40s or 50s, standing right next to me. And he's got the intelligence of maybe a 5-year-old, 6-year-old. And he's standing there watching the whole thing. So I'm trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do? The coffee's spilling over. And she runs out from behind the counter, and she stops the machine. And I say, you know, I'm sorry about the mess. You want to give me some napkins? I'll wipe it up. She goes to me, napkins? You want to use up all my napkins? You need a shmata. You don't need napkins for this. You're not too bright, aren't you? So, this man who's retarded, standing next to the machine, looks at me, puts his thumb on his finger on his lip, and says, not too bright. Not too bright. So the irony of the situation, I'm standing there, and I have the lady, I'm new to town, she's telling me I'm not too bright. I have a retarded guy standing there looking at me as I'm wiping it up, telling me, you're just not too bright. So I couldn't help but laugh at the irony of the situation as I'm cleaning up the coffee, and I'm being told I'm not too bright. So it struck me afterwards how I didn't get upset, you know. So this lady who I never met is telling me I'm not too bright, and even the guy standing next to me could tell me I'm not too bright.
But she should have done it herself.
Yeah, she did. She was. I'm saying, as curt as she was also nice. She came in. She cleaned up.
It doesn't
matter. But I'm saying that one of the questions I remember in sixth grade, we had a Rebbe who would take a half hour at the end of each class and talk to us about how to work about our traits. And one of the questions he'd ask us is, if someone tells you you're stupid, how do you react?
Just punch him.
Wait a second, why?
You're not supposed to do anything, really. Wait. The Jewish thing is not to do anything.
Stop and ask yourself, why does it matter? If someone came and told you, you know, you have 4 fingers, you don't have 5, and I'm quoting my 6th grade Rebbe now, would you get upset at him? You'd say, okay, so he says I have 4, but I know I have 5. If someone's telling you, why don't you react? It's just not true.
If you're insecure, you will.
But if someone tells you you're stupid, why are you reacting?
Because you
you're worried, it's true. Right. It's
if he says you're a murderer, doesn't react.
You know, it's ridiculous. But it's putting you down, too. It's belittle you, you
That's true.
But that's his problem, not your problem. You always understand.
So that's exactly what I want us to see. That it does hurt us. And the question is, why? And how do we overcome it?
It depends who says it.
So I was waiting for someone to say that. It depends who says it.
If she says it, it's one thing. If you're she would say it.
Right. I agree. So that's... So I want to take you to another story.
But that's not true.
What?
No, he said that Rosh Hashiva wouldn't say that. We have, the guy who wants to convert and he goes to one rabbi and the rabbi just sends him away because he thinks it's stupid what he said to him. So, Shammai, depends how...
Hopefully,
you
wouldn't say
unless
you
needed
to hear
it.
And he
was a
big
rabbi. No, so hopefully.
Well, because
okay, he didn't say you're stupid either.
No, but almost
he
sent him away.
Sorry, I mentioned it.
And you don't embarrass someone.
Yeah.
Of course, that's
sending somebody away is not to embarrass someone.
I mean, we're people.
Right. But I'm saying we have to stop and ask ourselves. Where is it coming from? How much of our reaction is what the other person said, and how much of it is that we have, if we can use a figurative term, we have this boil that's filled with pus in our heart, and this guy just touched it, and boom, the explosion is a reflection of what's festering inside of us, much more than what the other person did. And very often, what happens in relationships and in marriage especially, is that our reactions reflect issues we have, insecurities that we have, much more than they reflect something about the relationship, much more than they reflect something about what the other person did. And that's very hard to come to terms with. So hard that I spent all afternoon asking myself whether we should have this class or not. Because on some level, most people are not going to be willing to face themselves. And so that's why I said to myself, the class has to be has to have a few sections. I decided, yes, to take it head on, because at least it gives a person the tools to have some introspection. It's a starting point, but it's not simple what we're discussing here. So... I'll tell you an interesting story. I merited to learn by a few exceptional rabbis. I once heard a story, which then I saw it play itself out in other scenarios. There's a story about the Belzer Rebbe and the Gera Rebbe. I hope I'm getting the names right. But if I remember the story correctly, the Belzer Rebbe had an issue that he was very upset about something that a position the Gera Rebbe had. So they arranged a meeting, and the Belzer Rebbe comes to the Gera Rebbe, and when he's allowed into the room, he sees the Gera Rebbe leaning over his Gemara, and he is the epitome of serenity as he sees the Rebbe focused and immersed in his learning. The Rebbe comes in, so the Gera Rebbe closes his Gemara, and they talk, and they don't agree. And they spend the next half hour disagreeing, back and forth, and they're vehemently disagreeing. And they conclude without having reached an agreement. So the Belzer Rebbe wishes the Gera Rebbe well and gets up to leave. And as he's leaving, he turns around and he sees the Gera Rebbe over his Gemara with the same serenity, the same concentration, and he was shocked. Here he spent a half hour having a heated argument, and a second later, he's back in his Gemara. He walked out and said to the Hasidim, "You have a big Rebbe." There's a famous story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that when he eulogized his wife, he said, the custom is that we ask a spouse for forgiveness In truth, I have nothing to ask forgiveness for. I can't remember anything I ever did that wasn't in accordance with the Shulchan Aruch. But who knows, maybe I forgot something. We're all human. And being that that's the custom, I will ask you for forgiveness in the event that I did something that was wrong. So this was heard all around the world. Everyone was talking about this. And then a student caught up with him and said, Rebbe, do you mean to say you never argued with your wife? And he said, of course not. Of course I argued with my wife. So he said, then what do you mean? He said, what I meant was that our arguments never reached a personal level. It was never about you're this or you're that. We can disagree, and we could have strong disagreements. The question is, where do the disagreements focus? Is it a question of you, you're this or you're that, or is it a question of we disagree about something, and we can disagree over and over again, and that's fine. And we could have heated disagreements, but it doesn't reach a personal level. So when a person is insecure about himself, then what he hears touches home very often, and then his reactions will also touch home. His reactions will be very, very focused on hitting the other person where it hurts. Now you understand that that's a problem for a marriage which has nothing to do with the connection between the two. And very often we're looking at the root of a problem, we're looking at the connection, and it's not about the connection. It's about a certain person's insecurity. Sometimes one spouse can tell the other spouse, I love you. And the other spouse will reject it, will say a line to the effect of, I don't believe you. Prove it. All kinds of lines. So some of them are standard female lines, which are basically saying, say it again, say it stronger. But sometimes it stems from a person's insecurity. Sometimes it stems from an issue that runs deeper. And I want to give you an example. Don't answer the question, but think about it. When you're having an argument, how important is it that you win? Why? Do you find that when you speak in public, you feel like there's much more on the line than the subject that's being discussed? Are you thinking at the end of a conversation, did I impress them? Why? Where is it all coming from? So there's a concept of self-worth, self-esteem, self-confidence. They're not the same thing. And we have to be able to build them. Now, we can approach this from two angles. I think they're both important. How does one build real self-esteem and self-worth? So that deserves a series, right? And in part, that's what we're dealing with in the Sefer HaMidot. But I want us to touch on a few ideas. And I brought pieces of paper. And I think maybe we'll also take time in class for people to organize their thoughts. I'm not going to collect the papers. They're for you to look at and maybe destroy after you've written them. Let's ask ourselves, if we're walking around with a perpetual fear, if we're walking around with a perpetual pain, if we're walking around with this feeling that one day I'm going to be discovered, if only they knew, what are we scared of? What's gnawing at us? Meaning there are two approaches we can take to building healthy self-confidence. There are many approaches, but we'll discuss two. One is that a person can see the real worth that he has. And that's important. There's one approach where a person says, I'm not the worst person in the world. I do have positive things about me. And every person does. And sometimes a person feels so down and out that the only self-worth he feels is, well, God thinks I'm worth something. He gave me life. He gave me another chance today. A guy knocks on my door one night. He says, I can't go to bed. I say, why can't you go to bed? He says, because I can't face myself in the morning. Why can't you face yourself in the morning? I shouldn't even say this. Okay. He just did something which was pretty heinous. And he couldn't live with himself. And rightfully so. I won't say what he did. But let's leave it. But sometimes we have to be able to say, okay, but God gave me, God does believe I deserve another chance. He's given me another morning. Rabbah emunatecha. At the worst days, we should have that. I in our graduation ceremony from high school, so one of the speakers said to us, find the rabbi who you can go to on your worst day. I don't know if I'd say find the rabbi or find a friend, but we need to have at least this place in ourselves that we can go to on our worst day, where we can say, I'm not the worst person in the world. I have issues, I have things that are wrong, but I'm not the worst person in the world. And even if I am, God gave me another chance, and I have a chance to make it better, and I'm worth something. So in order to attain self-worth, we have to be able to look at what's right and see it for real. And very often, we don't even see our own value. Very often, we completely miss what value we have. Then there's another aspect, which is being willing to face our shortcomings, to look at them, to put them down on paper, and then ask ourselves, how terrible are they? So I've done things that are wrong. Now what? You look at the piece of paper, and sometimes, unfortunately, we can fill one side out much better than the other. We can put down our shortcomings. Oh, we could fill 3 pages of that. Now, what are our strengths? We have a very hard time with that. And this is a terrible problem in our generation. If we can't look and honestly be willing to put down on a piece of paper and the pluses should outweigh the minuses, we have a problem. It's not that the minuses are lies. They're slightly exaggerated, but the pluses are being overlooked tremendously. You guys heard of it? It's a Wonderful Life? You heard of that? Okay. I don't know, the book is black and white. Yeah, sure. Right, that's what I said. The book is black and white. So at any rate, the message over there is a very important message. That we sometimes, not sometimes, we usually overlook the real value that we each have. And so I want us to pause today. And what?
Writer of that screenplay played from a Hasidic background.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
there you go. He suffered loss, too, great loss. Right. And sometimes that's a big pain. You know, if you lose something, you lose a house in the market or wherever.
I think we have to stop and make a list. Positive, negative. And then we're going to take a look at that list and analyze it. So we're going to pause class. I'm going to give out pieces of paper. Unless you all veto me and tell me it's too painful for you to do?
Too painful.
Nah.
You go back to your Nivian man, boys.
I don't know if you're going to do it. If we, I'll tell you, if we don't do it today, I don't know if you'll do it.
You just spilled my blood. You know what we only say because you're tight.
If you, what we're trying to do is, again, we began by describing where insecurity could lead us. And then we came back and said, okay, let's make a list for ourselves. When we look at ourselves, one side of the page, what don't we like? What do we like? We're not talking about traits or qualities or anything else per se. Every person has different things that he likes and doesn't like about himself.
But you need to change those words before.
If we look at the lists we've written, so I think most people would say it was much easier to fill in the minus side of the page than the plus side of the page. For most people. How many people would agree with that? I definitely found it easier to fill in the minus side than the plus side. And I think that if we compare the minus and the plus, And if we look at the root of what we're looking at, very often the plus and the minus aren't disjointed. And part of our issue with the plus is that it's incomplete.
It's
not totally separate, the plus and minus. Meaning, let's say there's a plus that a person says, I honor my parents. And then on the minus side, he says, yeah, but sometimes I get upset at them and I say things I shouldn't say. And so you look at the plus and you say, but the plus is incomplete. And so then one of our issues that we have with ourselves is that our plus is not where it should be.
Say they honor their parents, do you think? The person who really does, or the person who's at such a high level that he thinks he should be doing more, and he won't like that he's doing it properly?
So, one of the issues our generation has is that we expect more of ourselves than it is fair to expect. And we're hard on ourselves that way. Now, again, that comes to play in many other areas of life where that insecurity is going to cause us to feel threatened, to need approval, to have a tremendous desire to get positive feedback, and that has a tremendous price afterwards. So I want to ask another question. And if you can draw a line through the middle of the page and write on the bottom two sides of the page. Okay? One, what do you think Hashem wants of you? And on the left side of the page, and maybe we should start with the left side of the page, where do you aspire?
Where do you want?
Where do you aspire to be? Where do you want to get to? Meaning, sometimes in life, you say, yeah, that's a fault, but then you're going to say, like someone just said, so tomorrow's another day, which will be another failure. So are we still aspiring? We have to ask ourselves, and sometimes the correct conclusion should be, I am not aspiring to accomplish A or B or C. So I have to stop beating myself up on that. There was a guy here who told me, I cannot talk to my father. He abused me, he did this, he did that, he did that thing, I will not talk to him. But then he kept beating himself up that he wasn't talking to his father. So, in his case, we brought him to a big posik. I said, who do you respect, who do you value? And we had him ask that posik, does he owe it to his father, halachically, to rebuild the relationship? And the answer was no. In his scenario, due to the abuse he underwent, he has no such responsibility. He has to build himself. So now the guy could take that off his head. That's no longer an aspiration. That's no longer a failing of his. There was another guy who was walking around beating himself up that he doesn't put his tzitzis out. He was always embarrassed to walk around with his tzitzis out. So one day we sat down and I said to him, so there are halakhic authorities that you shouldn't put your tzitzis out. So you don't have a custom from your parents' family. So you'll go with those authorities and be comfortable about it. Stop beating yourself up on it. Very often the fact that we're beating ourselves up over something weakens everything else we do. So this question, what do I aspire? Where do I aspire to be is very important because sometimes I don't even aspire to fix the minuses. I don't have a real aspiration to fix it. And then maybe I have to tell myself either, fine, I'm not dealing with that this year. That's off the roster. That's off the agenda for this year. And then I could be at peace with myself for this year. I'll tell you an interesting story. There was a yeshiva where the guys used to get up late for davening. And I suggested to the counselor in that yeshiva that they try a new program. They tell the guys, from now on, if you get up late for davening, you're not allowed to feel bad about it. You have to go daven, eat breakfast, take your shower, ignore the clock. We're going to take 3 weeks where no one aspires to wake up early. Where? What?
Chabad.
So take a month, 3 weeks, a hiatus where you're saying, I'm not fighting this. I'm going to get up and go to whatever minyan I make it to. and then I'll eat and I'll daven and I'll start my morning Seder whenever I start. So what happened? After a few days, the late minyanim were packed, right? You suddenly saw morning Seder was vibrant. People were learning and they were happy, because what ordinarily happens? A person wakes up late, and then he feels terrible that he woke up late, so he barely gives himself the time to brush his teeth. And if he does, he spills out the toothpaste. He's doing everything in this erratic fashion where he's just letting out his nerves on everything. And then he barely bothers changing half his clothing, and he walks around feeling filthy. And then he goes to daven, and his davening's a half davening, and he feels bad because he didn't brush his teeth the way he should. And he keeps kicking himself and saying, I missed this, and I missed that, and I missed the other thing. And he walks back, and he can't put a smile on his face. And then he starts his day, and for the next 4 hours, he's going to be dragging with him that lousy atmosphere of, I woke up late, and by about 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, he's finally settling down. So then that night, you know, life just began. At 11 o'clock at night, he's going to do the same shtuyot he did last night that's going to lead him to wake up late. What happened with this formula? The guys would wake up at 10 o'clock, smile to one another, hey, you're going to the 10:30 minyan, right? Okay. Out to the 10:30 minyan, take their time, take their drink, brush their teeth, get dressed normally. They'd start late. They'd start maybe 10, 15 minutes later than they would ordinarily. But they'd start with vigor. They'd start happy. So you saw yeshiva people walking around feeling comfortable with themselves. This is our deal. And these 3 weeks, this is our mitzvah. We go to daven late. After a few days, they started feeling like, hey, I enjoy this morning Seder. I want to get to bed on time. I want to accomplish more in the morning. What happens is we sometimes have a failing which we're not even working on. But we spend a lot of time beating ourselves up over the fact that we have this failing. You have this guy who says, I will not call my father. I want to have nothing to do with him. But he walks around for years beating himself up over that. So he's not working to fix it, but he's still dragging along because of it. So that's why we have to ask ourselves two questions. And now we'll reverse the order, because I think we have to work in that order. Number one, what am I aspiring to? How many things do I have in my weaknesses and my faults where I'm not working to fix that? It's not on the agenda. And then we have to ask ourselves, what does God want of me? Which goes back to a concept that we discussed a few weeks ago. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba Bitrunya Im Briyotav. God does not have unfair expectations of His creatures. He doesn't expect us to do a 180. He doesn't expect of us things that are beyond our strength. He has only fair expectations of us. He wants us to work a little bit. Not to work like crazy, to work a little bit. He doesn't want us to be workaholics. He wants us to work a little bit. You know, our famous allegory of the riding the bike, where you shift the gears so that it's a little bit of a strain. You shift the gears in the car so that the car is working a little bit. But we're not supposed to be working like crazy. We're growing slow and steady. So what does Hashem want of us? And the first question I think we have to ask ourselves is, what am I aspiring to? Of all these weaknesses that we look at, what am I aspiring to? If I look 5 years into the future, which of them am I looking to change? Realistically, not in a fairy tale land, where would they be different? But realistically, which of them am I looking to deal with? So now we have this list. And now, let's stop and go back to the point we're trying to discuss. Self-worth, self-confidence. I'm willing to bet every one of you can say that after looking at this list, your self-confidence has gone down. After looking at this list, you say, oh boy, now I have to face what's wrong with me, right? But wait. I'm also willing to bet, and this is what I'd like to challenge you to do. I'm willing to bet that if you took two friends who know you well, who were willing to be honest, and you told them you needed this for this class, ask them, I have to come back to next week's class with a list of what two friends wrote about me. What's positive about me? I'm willing to bet they'd write much more than you wrote. Truthfully. Not just to make you feel good. Truthfully. I had a few times where I was described. This goes back to my yeshiva days. They said there's a Jinji in yeshiva who's from Chutz Lartz, and then they gave a few more descriptory terms, and they weren't looking for me. They were looking for someone else. But people thought they were looking for me. Someone came to the yeshiva and said, there's a Jinji in yeshiva from Chutz Lartz, who? And then they gave a bunch of terms. And then people came looking for me. And then I said, I don't know the guy. He's not looking for me. He's looking for someone else. And I was surprised that people around me thought I matched that description. It was like a huge surprise to me. Oh, yeah, you think so? I know when I found out who he was looking for, I said, yeah, it matches his description. I never thought it matched me. But it gave me insight about how does the world view me? You know, something we don't usually get. We are a generation that has this weakness. We look at the minus. We don't give enough credit to the plus. We exaggerate the minus. Hashem doesn't expect us to be perfect. And we have to be able to come to terms with the fact that we're not perfect. We have to be able to look at the minus and say, but I'm doing what I can. I can't do much more than I can. So what bothers us is that we say, yes, I can. Yes, I should have. So we have to remember, there is the past, there is the present, and dot, dot, dot. There's a beautiful song they used to sing in Europe. He'avar ein, ve'he'atid adain, ve'ha'hove keheret ein. They didn't say it as a song, the Bali Musa used to say it. You know what it means? He'avar, the past, ein, gone. He'atid, the future, adain, yet to come. Ve'ha'hove, in the present, ke'avain, it's a fleeting moment, every second it passes. Dagami nine. So where's the worrying coming from? Where's the worrying coming from?
The worry.
What?
Worry.
Worry. Why are we worried? If the past is gone and the future is yet to come and the present keeps passing, so what am I worried about? So we have to stop and say, okay, I look at the minuses. How bad are they? So, oh, they're terrible. No, they're not. As bad as they are, they're not as bad as we make them. Have I really, really destroyed all those things? Or are they issues where I've made a little bit of headway? I wish I would have made more. I accomplished a little bit. I've digressed. I have a lot to work on. I have a lot I'm unhappy with. But we have to stop. We have to be able to wake up in the morning and be happy looking in the mirror. And this is a difference of night and day in everything we do. We have to focus on building our self-esteem and self-confidence. Being able to say, I'm not so bad. I'm a decent person. I'm okay. And not to wait for the guy out there to shine his light on me. To be able to shine my own light. To be able to say, I'm okay. I'll give you an example. You daven the good davening in the morning. So what are the thoughts you're thinking? Do you feel good with the davening? Or do you say, that was good. Yesterday wasn't. Chances are mincha won't be. Where do we look at? What do we... We have to be able to be realistic. To say, this is what's right. This is what's wrong. What's wrong doesn't overshadow what's right. What's right is good. I'm not perfect. God doesn't expect perfection. But I'm a work in progress. We used to have t-shirts. I'm a work in progress. Because, Under construction, right. God doesn't expect perfection from us. And we have to be able to see the good. We have to be able to look and say, I'm a decent person. Why don't we see the good? Because we're striving for more. Because there's so much that we'd like to be that we're not yet there, and we might never be there. And that's why it's so important to look at that section and ask ourselves, what am I aspiring to? If I don't even aspire to it, so then why am I beating myself up that I'm not there? I could have been there. I could have been a millionaire. You know how many investments I saw that made perfect sense and I didn't follow through? Could have been. Truth is, I begged people to give me money to invest and they didn't, and I didn't have any way of getting it. So okay, say that God didn't want me to have it. Fine. Can you beat yourself up because you don't have it? No. Big deal. I was invested in the stock market as a kid. When I was in the 18, 19. I made 300-400% on my money. But I didn't know the wisdom of pulling out in profit. So I lost it all. Damn it. Someone recommended a certain stock, a biomedical stock. I bought it and it went up and it went up again and it went up again. And I think I started out with $2,000 and it was over $6,000. And then the FDA came out with a ruling one day that buried the whole company, buried everything they had. They came out with a ruling that they couldn't patent the drug which they had developed for whatever reason. Boom. The stock went from $6 or $8 a share down to 20 cents a share. I bought it at $2 a share. Lost it all. Boom. No. Okay. Now what? So can I sit here and kick myself? I was so stupid and I lost it all and blah, blah, blah. No, I did the best I could.
At least you can see it from the money.
That's true. I gave an example in class a few weeks ago of things that were more serious that I made mistakes and serious mess ups. When I come to Yom Kippur, I have a lot of things that I cry about year after year. We all have the things we look back and say, okay, I did wrong. But wait a second, I also did right. And what I did wrong, I do the best tshuva I can. We have to be able to bury things. We have to be able to say, okay, I did what I could. I have to move forward. I can't drag the past with me. I can't live with constant regret. And coming to terms with ourselves is the greatest gift we can give ourselves and everyone around us. And it takes time. But it has to be real. And if it's real, then we can grow in ways that are impossible otherwise. Why do we have to be right in an argument? Why do we have to get that external applause? We need to have security. And if we have security, then we could have a serenity that allows us to grow. And I want to end with a story. I began the story earlier. I'll take you back to the story. When I was in yeshiva, one of the greatest things I merited to see was the serenity that big people in Israel have. Be it Rav Feinstein, be it Rav Shapiro Zatzal, you saw people who were able to smile, people who were able to joke. You know, in almost every conversation I had with these giants of Torah, they would throw in a joke. You think, serious people, halachic authorities. I can rarely remember a conversation. I remember once Rav Shapiro walked into the office and saw me standing there. He said, "Did he come yet?" So I said, "Rebbe, who?" He said, "Come on." "He didn't come yet?" I said, "I don't know who we're talking about, Rebbe, I'm sorry." He said, "Mashiach didn't come?" I'm standing there in the office, not the conversation I'd expect from the Rosh Yeshiva, Chief Rabbi of Israel. So I said, "He left word that he's coming. He left a message that he's on his way." So he looks at me and he says, "No, I don't think he'd talk to a guy like you." I walked out of the room.
You teach them in a rabbinical school, right?
What?
Cracking jokes?
I didn't learn it there, but I saw almost every conversation I had, they would stick in humor. I guess, okay. There was a student in the yeshiva who was connecting, really connecting to the way of the yeshiva. And he had a certain calmness about him. And one day, he's walking down the street. It's an evening. And he was walking by a library. And there was a mugger standing behind the library waiting for him to walk by and to mug him. So he's walking, and his mind is in Torah, and he's at his peace. So he's walking down the sidewalk, and he's carrying, you know, one of those wheelie suitcases. And as he walks by, the mugger walks out from behind the building and puts his hands to grab the suitcase. Start there. He's in his own world. He's in his Torah. He's with his serenity. He keeps walking. The mugger's trying to grab the suitcase, and he didn't realize what's going on because he's walking with his serenity. So the mugger goes flying as he keeps walking with the suitcase. Picks himself up and tries to walk in front of him. The guy looks back and he's still with his serenity because the guy didn't budge him from his peace. Smiles and keeps walking. By then he's in broad daylight where other people are there, and the mugger's left in the dust for me to look at him to look at the guy walk by, and nothing happened. And to me, that was a huge lesson about how a person can be in such serenity that even in a mugging situation, He looks at the mugger, smiles, and keeps walking. That's when a person can grow and come to a comfort level. And again, we can reach there and walk out of there. It's not like you made it, that's it, you're there. There are stages in life, but we have to aspire to get there. We have to aspire to come to peace with ourselves, where we know our weaknesses, we're willing to say our weaknesses, we're not scared of them. They're a work in progress, we're a work in progress, we're not perfect, and we don't need that positive feedback from everyone around us. We can be positive without it. It's nice to get it, but we shouldn't be thirsting for it. And many times, coming back to our marriage class, when things are heating up in the house, we have to ask ourselves, why? Why does this mean so much to me? Is it like what suggested earlier? Of course it means a lot to me. If she calls me stupid, come on, she called me stupid. She's the most important person in my life. Is that really it? Or is it because I'm insecure? And if someone calls me stupid, I have a problem with it. I told you the line. A woman asks her husband, why are you upset? What's the real answer? I'm upset because I have issues. If I were confident enough, if I were calm enough, then even though you did something that's upsetting, I wouldn't be upset. Why am I upset? The real reason is because I have issues. And that's the famous story of the Chafetz Chaim. You know, when the Chafetz Chaim would get upset, you know what he'd do? He'd go to a corner and start talking to himself. He'd say, Yisrael Meir, what's wrong with you? Why are you getting so upset? Why are you so full of yourself? Why do you think you have a right to get upset at someone else? Of course he did something to you. He'd do it when his wife would get upset at him too. His wife would get upset. The Chafetz Chaim had an interesting marriage. Things weren't so simple. I can't say the story online, but I'll tell you the story after class. There are a few famous stories, and a few giants of Israel had complex marriages. Chafetz Chaim would stay up at night. His wife would want to schmooze with him. So imagine, after a grilling day, he'd stay up at night, way past midnight, talking to her for 2-3 hours, till she was calm that she could go to sleep. She needed her quality time with him. Not what you'd think about, right, with Chafetz Chaim. You'd think he's learning every free moment. No, his wife needed her time. He'd spend hours with her every night, talking to her, talking about what she needed to talk. That was a part of his life. And when he'd have an issue with his wife, so this is famous, not only with his wife, he'd go over to a corner and he'd start having a conversation with himself. Why are you so upset? You're upset because you have issues. You're not upset because of her. Ah, what she did is upsetting, but you're upset. And he'd have this whole long conversation with himself, all the time looking at his tits, just trying to calm down. I know you have an excuse, you're a Kohen and Kohanim get upset, but you still shouldn't get upset at her. Why are you getting upset at her? She'd have a conversation. If we're willing to be real with ourselves, then we can realize that a lot of our issues are stemming from our own insecurity. And one of the ways to acquire security is to be willing to look at ourselves and say, okay, I might be wrong. Okay, I can see I have these weaknesses, but I also have strengths. I have two files at home. Whenever I get a thank you letter or something, sometimes I get an email or a letter of appreciation, I store it away in a file. I call that file the file of, I'm not the worst person in the world. And sometimes I have to look at that file. I can go years without looking at it, and sometimes I have to look at it because I have to remind myself I'm not the worst person in the world. We all have frustrations. But if we can grow out of that insecurity and have real self-esteem, then we will resolve many, many, many of the issues that come in marriage. And in all interpersonal relationships, it's not. We will find that most of the issues stem from there. By us and by our spouse. And if we have true self-confidence, then we could also help our spouse build true self-confidence. Because a person who has confidence can give confidence, can give real compliments, can give real appreciation, and it doesn't threaten them. Yes?
Is that normal, though, to, you know, go in a corner and start having a conversation with yourself? I mean, like, that's like kind of like crazy.
I don't think so. If it's a way of a person working on themselves.
Is it better to talk to actual human beings about your issues and
find yourself? Sometimes human beings have to respond, okay, oh, like, get over it. Or
no, I'm talking about like maybe a professional. I'm not talking about like just a
I think...
This is the heat of the fight. You don't have time to go up to a professional in the heat of the fight.
My recommendation, by the way... I agree with what Daniel said. I'm saying you don't have time, right? And you have to diffuse it. I personally say a variation of what Chafetz Chaim did. When you're in the heat of the fight, go to the bathroom. And adopt the minhag of not talking in the bathroom. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. It's not really a minhag. So you can't talk. The fight just stopped. You're human. You're allowed to go to the bathroom. It's like a timeout. You get to go to the bathroom, you get to rearrange your thoughts, you get to ask yourself, is this really worth the fight? Can I, can we postpone this? Can we find a compromise? Is it worth, why am I fighting? Is the fight really about something that matters so much, or is it really because of my issues? And if we can be real about it, then we can resolve a lot. This was a starting point. I think there are excellent books in the library, and I think we attacked it very head-on with a little bit of tools. There's much more to be discussed and much more in self-help books in the library. Once a person realizes where things are coming from, it's up to you to keep working. But life is a much better place when a person has real self-esteem. Things hurt less. Things carry less exaggerated meaning. And then a person can connect much better to other people. Yes?
So what if you're in a situation with your spouse and or your friends? They're just saying hurtful things. Whether jokingly, you know, they think it's funny, maybe they don't realize they're saying hurtful things, or maybe they sort of realize in the back of their mind that it justifies them now. If you can't look for that situation, which I imagine there's a way you can't, how would you go about that?
Because if you can, what? Right? Right? So let me tell you a story that happened to me. Okay? Real story from about a month and a half ago. I was sitting in a yeshiva, and someone who I really admire was sitting right next to me, and they said a comment about me which really hurt. Which really, I was devastated hearing it. So I thought about it. I didn't say anything. I thought about it, and I said to myself, why am I devastated? Because I value this person, and if that's what they think of me, then that hurts, right? And then I thought about it some more, and I said, it probably hurts because there's probably an element of truth to it. They're entitled to think of me whatever they want. They're entitled. I don't think a person should say it. I think it's wrong. It's not, you know. But at the end of the day, I have to learn from it. So it's a very painful process. The person saw me a few days later and asked me, you seem upset at me. What's wrong? I didn't tell him anything. I didn't say a word. But I wanted to tell him, you know, it was a public setting. It wasn't fair to bring it up then. But I wanted to tell him, you know, he said, hey, whatever he said, it hurt. You're entitled to think that. And I appreciate I heard it. I have to tell you that my self-work for the last month and a half has been phenomenally different ever since I heard that line. It opened my eyes to, because he was a little careless in the way he spoke, but it was an eye-opener for me. It taught me a lot about what I still have to do in life. And as hurtful as it is, it's a source of growth. At the end of the day, it forced me to look at myself. It forced me to see, okay, there's something you have to work at. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, he says, "Bikrov alai mere'im tishmana oznai." When people who hate me come around me and they're going to try and they curse me out, I listen. Why do I listen? So the Tiferes Yisrael in his commentary on Mishnah explains, he says, when people hate you, they're going to look for that point that really hurts and they're going to tell you it. So David HaMelech says, okay, so that's what I need to hear. So that's how I'm going to learn. That's how I'm going to grow. It's very hard for us to see ourselves, right? But if someone actually says something, so then if we're truthful about it, there are one of two options. You could say, this is a hurtful person. Why should I be with this person? Goodbye. And walk away from that conversation or that relationship. Or sometimes you could say, what he's saying is real. Now I have two choices. I could be upset at him for saying something real, or I could say, wait, if it's real, so I got to work on it.
But if you start working on it, you go, you acknowledge me, don't.
But what's wrong? I don't disagree.
Because then they start, the syndrome is they start feeling high about themselves, and then they're very eager to start criticizing them again. It's a vicious cycle.
So that's an unhealthy relationship. That's unhealthy. So that's a relationship we should try to change. But
I have another question.
I just want to pause. Class is over. Everyone's, you know, anyone who wants to stick around is welcome to stick around. But say that. Sometimes we can address it directly. Tell a person, you know, with all due respect, I don't think it's your job to be criticizing and pointing out what's wrong with me. That's fair to say. Sometimes we could tell a person, you know, what's your point in criticizing? It depends on the relationship. So we discussed, that was last week's class and the week beforehand. We discussed that spouse's job is not to criticize. A spouse's job is to be a source of strength and confidence. And that's what we discussed in the previous classes. No one's saying that it's your spouse's job to criticize you. That was what we discussed in the previous classes. We said that even the criticism that's correct is detrimental to marriage. Most people have a very hard time taking criticism. The Talmud says in their days, you couldn't find someone who loved the person for criticizing them. Talmud says in their days, King David, King Solomon describe people who are such giants that when you'd criticize them, they'd be appreciative. They'd say thank you and they'd love you for it. But the Talmud says in their days, they didn't have anyone on that level. So, of course, in our days, we're not on that level, and that's why criticism doesn't belong in marriage. But for us to look at ourselves and be able to say, okay, I have to grow. And to be able to say, I'm not the worst person in the world just because I didn't grow yet. I have my good qualities, I have my good traits, and I could live with myself.
So, yeah, but this leads me to a full circle, which is to say, but if you're in that relationship, you're married, and you find out she likes to say things, like, either jokingly or seriously, how can you change that without, like, making yourself look egotistical, first of all, without her being defensive and saying, well, I just said that because you need to hear it. But no, I mean, she says it over and over again, or he says it over and over again, and, like, it's starting to hurt because they say, oh, they don't really joke about it. How do you change that situation without an escalation?
That deserves a broad discussion. I could tell you in a nutshell, but I think it deserves a broad discussion. I think in a nutshell, a couple have to find a good time to have a good conversation, and then they have to say, okay, here are the issues. What are the issues? A wife can say, you're always late, and it embarrasses me. Or a husband can say, you're always late. You know, we agree with our friends, we'll show up at this time for the meal, we show up a half hour later. A spouse can say, you make jokes at my expense, and it hurts me. A spouse can say, you spend beyond what we agree, and that's not fair, and it throws our whole budget, and it throws our whole lifestyle, and it hurts me. You make a whole list of what are the things, and each side should write up a list of what they feel are their grievances, and then you look at the list together calmly, without pointing fingers. You say, okay, fine, I know I have my weaknesses, she knows she has her weaknesses. And then you say, okay, let's choose which one we're going to work on now. Which one can I work on? I choose which one I work on, not she chooses. And she chooses which one she works on. And then we say, okay, the agreement should be, we're each going to work on it and realize that this is our weakness. Let's gauge ourselves at the end of the week or at the end of the month. And let's agree that the rest of the list we're forgoing now. We're not criticizing one another for the rest of the list. We realize we have this weakness and it's a problem. We realize we have this fault. We're not dealing with that right now. And we're not criticizing over that right now. That's a general direction that I think could work for many couples. And lot, slowly, they build more positive habits. Will they resolve the issues completely? Chances are not. But will they make headway? Chances are yes. And I think that's good enough. I don't think you can expect that much more, realistically. But again, it's a short version.